Hi, this is your host, Andrew Rafel, the founder and CEO of Baintree Wealth Advisors. And I wanted to personally welcome you to Your Wealth and Beyond, a podcast that will empower you, the entrepreneur and business owner, with the insight and information you need to effectively manage and control your personal and professional finances. I'm going to help you focus on growing your business, building your wealth, and most importantly, finding purpose in what matters most. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Your Wealth and Beyond. I'm your host, Andrew Rafel, and today we've got a fantastic show lined up. The reason is simple. It's our guest. I'm excited to introduce you all to Jeff Boss. Jeff is somebody that I've known a long time, since our days growing up on the east side of Cleveland. But more than that, it's somebody that I highly respect for what he did for this country serving in the Navy SEALs. He was deployed 8 times to Iraq and Afghanistan. And what Jeff's going to bring today is not only his experiences within the Navy SEALs, goes through items such as being shot at, parachute not opening up 4 times, 2 in 1 day, and really just navigating chaos and how to keep your team together. So as Jeff has done, as he's now become a leadership guru, helping businesses and CEOs become better leaders and team building, he brings that experience from the Navy SEAL into the corporate world. And as business owners, we're all striving for success and keeping the team on the same mission. As an author and a podcaster, Jeff has some great ideas that he's going to bring to making sure that you are the best leader you can be and that your team is on track for a purpose. Without further ado, my podcast today with Jeff Boss. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Your Wealth and Beyond. I'm your host, Andrew Rafel, and today I am super excited to introduce all of you to somebody that I respect thoroughly and that I've known actually for a very long time. Jeff Boss, welcome to the Your Wealth and Beyond podcast. How are you doing today?
Hey, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for having me, Andy. It's been a while, but I'm doing great, and you got a great show here. Love what you're doing, so thank you.
And thank you. And before we get started, I just wanted to take the time to really thank you and your teams over the years for everything you did for this country. So we're going to dig into a lot of that stuff today, but I really appreciate everything that you did over those 15 years. So awesome stuff, man.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
And as the listeners know, the Your Wealth and Beyond podcast is really built to help entrepreneurs, business owners, build their business, become a better leader, find purpose. And having Jeff on today is so perfect because that's what he lives and breathes. And we're going to dig in today on some of the principles that, Jeff, that you used at your time as a team member in the Navy SEALs and now in the private sector of your passion to help business owners become better leaders. And I think, and probably from your experiences, you know, what you see with leaders, a lot of times entrepreneurs, they're not that great of a leader and they need some guidance. And that's something that, you know, they just don't teach that in school, you know?
No, it's not something you really can teach. It really just comes from experience. But there's also got to be that will to become better. To go back to what you mentioned earlier about entrepreneurs, you're exactly right, because what typically happens with a lot of the startups that I see, and even with promotions in large companies, you're promoted or you start a company based on what you know, on your skills, you know, on your subject matter expertise, but that doesn't necessarily transfer to leading others, to bringing people together and to forming a team that can carry out and execute that product flawlessly. So it's a huge gap, but you know, the ones who bridge that gap, you know, sustain and grow, and do it. The ones who don't kind of flounder and fail.
So, you know, you've obviously got this passion for being better yourself every day and for teaching those ethos to business owners and employees and to just people in general. But before we jump in and go through your philosophies, can we walk the listener through a little bit of who Jeff Boss is? As we mentioned in the intro, you know, over 15 years experience, dedication within the Navy SEALs and protecting the country and doing many things that, you know, we'll never really know truly what you guys did to help us. But, you know, walk us through kind of what led you down that path. How did you know at a young age, or if you knew at a young age, that you wanted to be a Navy SEAL, and you know, kind of walk us through how you got to that point, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I always knew what my purpose was. And actually, I knew what I didn't want to do. Actually, I started with that. I knew nothing wrong with it, but I didn't want to wear a suit and tie. I didn't want to work in an office, didn't want to sit in a cubicle and just pull my hair out and just do mindless stuff. Nothing, like I said, nothing wrong with it. I'm totally good with it now. But at the time, that just wasn't the path for me. So I wanted to do something different. I wanted to be the best at it, and I wanted to see action. So I figured SEALs are it. There's one group out there that seems to do all this, and they're awesome at it, and that's what I want to do. So I went to and that was in high school. You know, as you know, I knew ever since high school what I wanted to do. So I went to enlist after high school, and I couldn't because I had a skin irritation that prevented me from enlisting. They didn't know if it was contagious or not. So whatever. It actually turned out to be the best sort of draw or event, because it forced me to go to college. Thank God, you know. So went to college, graduated in about 3.5 years from Ohio State. Thank you very much. And then joined the SEALs after that. And then went through BUDS. Had a setback with a stress fracture in my femur midway through Hell Week. Got sent back to day one. Went through it again. Went to SEAL Team 4. Did 2 deployments there before I screened for another SEAL team, which the public knows entirely too much about now. But it's Naval Special Warfare Development Group, which everybody knows is SEAL Team 6. Went through selection for that, which is very similar to the selection process for BUDS, except on an operational level. I did 6 more deployments there, total of 8. Got shot on 2 of them, deployed mainly to Iraq and Afghanistan, other places. Had 4, this is crazy, 4 times my parachute didn't open. I've done, you know, hundreds of free fall jumps. 4 times my parachute didn't open. It didn't matter who packed it. I packed them. Professional riggers packed it. That's just my dumb luck. But walked away from those, lost a number of friends, including my best friend. And I got to the point over at the end of 13 years that it wasn't what we were doing that really got to me. It actually became what we weren't doing anymore. And it kind of goes back to purpose, you know, because when I signed up, I knew that I wanted to be a SEAL, and I knew why I wanted to be a SEAL, and I knew what we were doing was important. And so through all these, you know, I give a talk and I share all these peaks and valleys throughout my career, and, you know, equate it to the audience. But the takeaways for returning to all those sorts of crazy elements, and, you know, what kept me going and returning despite getting shot, despite losing friends, despite my parachute not opening. What kept me returning wasn't like the superhuman resilience that people like to equate to SEALs. It was really 2 things that I've realized that really come down to what compels people to return back to chaos. And it's having a team to return to, the people, and having a mission that you believe in to return to. And so when that mission changed, that's when I left, because I didn't feel that I belonged to it. So that's what I do now is translate and share those experiences through leadership and team coaching. With private companies, because what I find is that people, teams, organizations, you know, we all define success differently, as we should, but the means by which we all go about succeeding is always the same. And it requires leadership, teamwork, communication, decision-making.
So, and thank you for that high level overview. And in what you just said, a lot of great nuggets that I want to dig into. But when, you know, you think about, I read in your book, The Navigating Chaos, which we'll touch on some of the key points of that later on. You had mentioned that in one of the chapters, kind of the motto for the SEALs is first the mission, then the team, and then the individual. And if you look at that, and I was thinking in terms of me as a business owner and you listeners as a business owner, linking that from what you did and your motto there to what a successful business is all about, would you say that you could interconnect that and cross those over to show why you guys were successful, what you did, and then in businesses, why they are successful because they have a common mission?
Yeah, absolutely. So that whole mission team individual flow, it's a priority of thought. You always put the mission first, and then the team that executes that mission, and then the individual who supports that team. It's always in that priority, in the flow, 99% of the time. You know, at the same time, we're not going to accept a mission that's going to pose an imminent threat to force. You know, we're not going to accept a suicide mission. That's when it just wouldn't make sense. So that's when you put the team ahead of the mission, right? So there's no 100% solution, right? But that's the general thought process of, and not just the SEALs, but I would say military in general. It's service minded, right? When you equate that to organizations, when I go in and I'll ask, say you get like the head of sales, the head of marketing, the head of finance, you know, whatever, get them all in a room, ask them how the organization that they're a part of defines success. You get three different answers because they don't share that. They don't have any sort of process to communicate across silos because they're so narrowly focused on their own. They're so focused on what they do and not on what each other does. And it's not because they don't care. They just don't have a process for it. And they may not necessarily see how, you know, what marketing is doing is impacting sales, but it completely does because organizations are one big system.
And that would be also for, I mean, whether it's a small one or two person company that's just getting going and a medium company, and then you've got employees with hundreds and hundreds of employees. You've kind of seen that where that type of success or failure, it doesn't matter how or where you are in the zone of building your company, but that you've seen it in both sides, in both small and large.
Oh yeah. From the startup up through, you know, Fortune 500, what it really comes down to is awareness. You know, you don't have to know at a granular level what each other's doing, but you certainly have to be aware of it, because if you don't, then duplicative efforts arise. You know, you waste time, you waste money, you waste mind share doing things that other departments are probably doing that you don't even know about simply because there wasn't any sort of communication process to identify it.
And, you know, I know you glossed over it kind of quickly, right? And we could spend a whole show in regards to your career with the SEALs, but I want to go back to the training. And you had indicated with Buds that you had a setback, you had a stress fracture. So can you, you know, I know a lot of it's been publicized in movies, and we're not going to dig into the nuts and bolts of what you did on a daily basis, especially like in a hell week, but what did you do to persevere there as you went through this training? And then all of a sudden you got hit with this adversity, the stress factor. What does that mean? What can you kind of walk the listener through what that meant to you and how you had to pick yourself up and refocus and stay true to what your passion was?
Yeah, it's that was definitely a low point. That sucked. It sucked because when you start something as intense as Bud's training, as SEAL training, you want to finish with the class that you start with, you know, because when you have those crazy, just transformative experiences with a certain, you know, with guys, with your team, you want to stay with them. And so when I was rolled back to day one, I was just completely shot. I was just so just depressed. I was angry. I was sad. I was like, what, you know, why is this happening? Because I know I'm going to be a SEAL. So why the delay? But what kept me on track was two things. I knew what I wanted to do, and I knew what I didn't want to do. I didn't want to go to the fleet. Nothing wrong with it, but sitting on a ship for 6 or 8 months at a time is not for me. And so there's only one option. That's to put all sort of emotion aside and just put your head down and keep going.
What did that mean then? You said going back, roll back to day one. Yeah, like how far were you or close were you to the goal line? And then what did that mean stepping back to day one? Was that basically starting brand new again in a new class?
Yeah, starting off in a new class, but Hell Week is the third week of Buds. Buds is roughly 6 to 7 months. So it's the beginning, but it's also a pretty intense selection point in Buds. It's not the only selection point. We actually lost more guys in my second class after Hell Week than we did before and during Hell Week. But I was rolled back Wednesday morning of Hell Week. I think when you get to like Wednesday afternoon, they roll you forward. So I missed it by just a matter of hours. And I was rolled back to day one. And the first few weeks of Buds are just intense physical conditioning. So what it meant for me to be rolled back was I would just more log PT, more running around with boats on your head and repeating those first couple of days of Hell Week.
Well, I'll tell you, you've still stayed true to that passion, because if anybody's following your Instagram, and all of this will be in the show notes along with some great calls to action that we'll be able to do. But you pretty intense, man. It's it gets me motivated. I get the kettlebell going. I'm ready to rock and roll at the gym after seeing some of your videos there. So keep up that good. Yeah, it's good stuff there. So when you think about, and I think I heard maybe on one of your podcasts, and it makes perfect sense, but you think about what you guys learn, your team, as training and then through the different missions that you're on, why is there so much of when those of you get out of the service and you get to the private sector that so many SEAL team members become entrepreneurs or thrive in a startup type of environment? What do you think is the catalyst for that?
You know what it is? It's because we know what it's like to live without rules. It's exactly what it is. And working for somebody else just sucks because it's not your rules. I can't think of, there's few guys, nothing wrong with it, few guys who actually work for a larger company. I worked for a management consulting firm for about a year and a half before I was like, all right, I'm out of here. I got to do my own thing. Because I just felt that I could do things better. But I think that's exactly it. Plus, there's a small team aspect. Startups are small teams. And our entire career, our entire upbringing in the SEALs was always centered around a small team. And so that's exactly what startups are. You know, you have the opportunity to create, to innovate, to, you know, make decisions on your own. And that's exactly what SEAL teams are about. SEALs are very, very creative. The SEALs were actually, when I was at Dev Group, it was a very, very entrepreneurial culture. If you can rationalize a reason to bring in an outside vendor for training or whatever, make it happen, then you can do it, you know? And when guys get out and they leave and they go work for a larger company, they don't have that sort of luxury. So I think that's what lures them into becoming an entrepreneur.
And how many years were you in the SEALs?
13.
Okay. So what led you then? Was it just time for you to go on to the next chapter? When did you finally realize that I've done what I needed to do and I needed to move on?
Yeah, a couple things. So when I was in, I got my master's in organizational leadership. I did it while we were training, where we were deploying. It was a distance-based degree, but I wanted to apply it. And I knew I've always been into leadership development and, you know, improvement. And so I wanted to translate how we operated and just the lessons and experiences from the teams to business, because I knew they translated. You know, I didn't know how yet at the time, but I knew that they would. It would just be a matter of semantics. I thought the degree would help me. It did to a certain extent. And so I got to the point that I just wanted to, it just got boring. Honestly, you go out on a couple hundred targets after the same kind of shithead and it just gets old.
It's amazing that, I mean, I guess in anything, it gets old. You know, it's something that complacency, doing the same thing over and over again. Obviously, business is a lot different than what you were experiencing on a day-to-day basis. But that's so interesting to hear that even in that, from those that have never been in your shoes, to think that it ever became complacent is just, it's mind-blowing. But I see it. That does make sense that, obviously, you've got more on the line than getting bored in business. But I think that rings true in all parts, and that's interesting for you to hear.
It's very true because, you know, you play enough basketball games, the next game is going to be another basketball game. It's the same thing. And for me, I was getting complacent for sure, despite all that crazy shit that happened to me. And I knew that that wasn't a place for me to be complacent because then I was a liability for the team. And the mission changed. The mission was a new mission that I just didn't believe in. So it was just time for me to leave.
And that, you know, the term of, you know, 13 years doing it day in and day out, you think about, you know, what LeBron James has been doing for 15 years, day in and day out, and staying the top and the best. I mean, it just, that kind of even instills that legendary status of him. And obviously everything he does is around a passion, and 15 years doing it, you doing it 13 years, business owners in and out doing it for all those years. And it's hard to wake up every day and say, you know what, it's game time. And so it's just incredible to see what he keeps doing. So I digress back. So when you think about some of the trials and tribulations that you faced, and I think you lead that into the leadership, or when you're teaching leadership to business owners, in your book, you talk about this mantra of shoot, move, and communicate. And can it kind of take us down the road of how you take from what you learned in the Navy SEALs and how that can be utilized to be an effective leader and to build a bigger and better business?
Yeah, God, we could go down a number of different pathways here. But you know, in the context of the book, there were three things that we needed to do on the battlefield, both as individuals and as a team, in order to win. You know, we needed to shoot, we needed to move, we needed to communicate together and as sole operators. And so when you translate that to business, I developed, you know, if we were to break down each of those, shoot, move, and communicate, into how each one of those applies to business. I don't know if you've ever shot a gun before, but when you like bullets don't just find their target like they do in Hollywood. You know, it takes a lot of focus, a lot of physical and mental and sometimes emotional alignment to pull that trigger and make sure it's a smooth pull and to make sure that the bullet finds its target. It takes a lot of focus. It takes a lot of mental prowess. It takes a lot of physical, actually, stability. So what I did was boil that down into four different elements that really, you know, define or actually consist of us and how we show up in just in life, in every single, you know, situation in life. We're all made up of physical, emotional, mental, spiritual capacities. And so those four elements kind of determine how we perform. So that's it. And I'm kind of generalizing here, but that's what I boiled down from shoot. You know, when you move into the move domain, what I took was that, say, for example, we're in a gunfight. We're receiving incoming fire from an enemy. We need to move. We need to move from where we are to where we need to be in order to keep our strategic advantage. It's adapting. It's adapting to the moment. So I equate a move to adaptability. And communicating is just that. Communication, but also it's a degree of leadership as well.
So when you look at that first aspect of shooting and you see how smooth it is, it just doesn't happen overnight. So it's, you know, to get that performance, it's about training. It's about putting the time in to be successful, whatever you're doing. And so when you look at a business and a business owner, you know, being a leader doesn't just happen overnight. I struggle with it as my team is growing and I know what I'm good at. And to be a leader, like we talked about earlier, they're not teaching it in school. And I think some have the gift. Most don't have it innately. They lead from what I've seen successful-wise is they lead by example and they put the time in to be the best that they can be. So would you correlate that then, that performance, to whatever you're doing, whether you're an athlete, whether you're in the Navy SEALs, whether you're the best business owner, that to be that, to have that look of the smoothness of the shooting is, it's about putting the time in to get there?
Absolutely. You know, you got to put the time in every single day, whether you like it or not, you got to put in that time. And, but it also comes with identifying the end state, identifying what that target looks like and then working backwards for how you're going to hit it, you know, because leadership looks differently to different people. So when you work with those different people, it's important to determine what that shared definition of success looks like so that when they're looking at you, they realize that you're not micromanaging, you know, you're doing this for a reason.
And then when you look at the moving, the adaptation, you talk through a lot on chaos. You're one of your podcasts, the Chaos Cast, right? So inevitably, you know, when we look at anything, and especially business is ever changing, whether you're a small business or you're a mature business. You know, I don't want to correlate it to going to battle, but, you know, would you say that going to business, it's every day there are going to be new challenges, and to become the best and stay on top, you're going to have to weather storms. And that's going to be being able to understand, right, where chaos is and how to thrive in that environment. So how do you prepare a leader to be able to lead their team, right? What are some of the ways that we can teach a leader to have their teammates, their employees thrive in an area of chaos, which is the norm for all businesses?
Yeah, it comes back to a daily grind, right? We can't just give people the tools. One, they need to want to sort of have those tools. And then two, leaders got to set the conditions for that sort of motivation to occur. I can't motivate you. You can't motivate me because motivation is intrinsic. But what we can do as leaders is set those conditions. Where I typically start with team leaders, for example, is looking at the conditions that allow for teamwork or that prevent it. 60 to 70% of the effectiveness of a team can be traced back to the conditions that set that team up for success to begin with. 30% comes from how that team is launched. Only 10% comes from outside coaching. So setting those conditions, it's the majority of effectiveness, right? Which are huge. And what those conditions are, if you remember from the book, The Five C's, clarity, competence, confidence, and curiosity. And that, you know, it's probably too much to go into each one of those for this podcast, but starting off with why the team exists, what they do, and why what they do is important. A lot of times, most of the teams that I see, they don't have that sort of clarity as to what they're doing. I mean, at a granular level and why. And by that, I mean, There's ambiguity in roles and responsibilities, right? There's unclear membership. Sometimes when an SVP thinks that they're a member of a team just because of their role or position, it completely disrupts the team's dynamics and therefore its results because membership wasn't clear to begin with. So getting those conditions right from the get-go is what sets that team up for success.
And so that comes to that communication, which I think a lot of leaders aren't that great in. It's communicating the message, the mission to the top, to the bottom. What are some tips that you can give, you know, real high level today to be a better communicator for the company as a whole so that everybody is motivated and understands the mission that's at hand for the business?
You just hit on something really important, is communicating from top to bottom. And that's the usual perspective, you know, because we operate in like hierarchies. So we think very linearly. But one of the best learning lessons, at least that I took away from JSOC, was when we shifted from communicating top down to communicating across. Because when you communicate across, you hit every single node in between you and the recipient so that everybody understands what's going on and why. Now, if I just communicate top down, say between myself and the recipient, nobody else is going to know. But when you communicate across, then you build that shared context and that awareness that enables others to go make decisions that they need to decide upon.
Excellent. And, you know, when you've helped a lot of companies, a lot of employees, a lot of leaders over the years. And if you were to think about, put yourself in the employee shoes, looking up to the leader, what do you think they're looking for? What does that, whether it be in the military, whether it be a business, but what is that person or that group of people looking for in a leader to motivate them?
What are they looking for in a leader? They're looking for leaders to give them opportunity, you know, because everybody wants to flourish. Everybody wants to get out there and be effective, be successful in what they do. And when they don't find those opportunities, when a leader stifles development opportunities, or they just don't communicate with them, or they don't ask them questions as to how they can show up better the next day, those employees are going to find somewhere else where they can flourish, you know, so that they miss that belonging piece. I think at a very human level, you know, people don't want to work. They want to belong, right? They want to belong to somewhere where work is just a byproduct of it. And I don't mean like doing hard work. I enjoy working. I'm sure you do too, but I enjoy working in something that I belong to and believe in. And I think that's what everybody's looking for. That's what they're looking for leaders to create those conditions of.
Yeah, you think in terms of right now where we are in the, you know, the economic expansion. I mean, unemployment is at an all-time low. So you've got now really it's an employee market out there. So if you're not doing everything you can, and as you said, it's not so much about how much you're paying them. For some it is, but I think for the vast majority, especially for these younger millennials, it's about the experience. It's about being part of something. And you hit it on the head there, which is providing that opportunity, where so many leaders forget that. And if they're micromanaging, because, you know, I think from my standpoint, I think most entrepreneurs in the beginning stages are so hands-on, it's their baby, right? And they are micromanaging things to the 10th degree, and that stifles growth. I think we all face that. Would you say that you've seen that with businesses that maybe aren't succeeding and moving as fast as they could, is that there's that micromanagement and not allowing these employees to flourish?
Totally. I actually just wrote an article on Forbes the other day about how to manage a micromanager. You're absolutely right. Those entrepreneurs, those leaders, they just can't get out of their own way, or they don't know how to get out of their own way. It's, for example, with an entrepreneur, an entrepreneur comes up with a great idea, like you said, it's their baby. And so trusting somebody else with their baby is a big step, you know, and that oftentimes it requires learning how to trust others, you know, what you need to trust them with, how to set up decision-making boundaries so that, you know, five people are making the same decision, or, you know, kind of encroaching on the same space. But yeah, it's absolutely, you know, setting up those, identifying those conditions for trust.
Okay. And so let's talk a little bit about adversity. In all walks of life, we face adversity. And again, I know you glossed over it in the beginning, but if we could touch on, you know, kind of the adversity you faced, especially with two aspects, right? Being deployed 8 times. And I believe you mentioned with regards to a parachute, 4 times did not basically go as planned. Is that accurate when you were jumping?
4 times my parachute was less than ideal. Yeah.
So let's walk through this, because, you know, I bungee jumped. I've never skydived. I know a lot of the listeners have skydived. Obviously, a lot different skydiving than what you did with, I don't know how much weight is on your back when you're going and doing that. But how do you, okay, you know, and I know we could spend a whole hour going through the emotions going through it, but your first time you jump, and so what's happening? You go to pull the chute, and it doesn't work.
Normally, there's a pilot chute that opens up. It catches wind, and that pilot chute is what pulls open the canopy out of the container, and you feel it. But this time, I didn't feel it, and so I'm falling, and I'm like, what is going on? I'm looking over my shoulder, and I don't see a canopy. I'm like, what the? This is my first parachute malfunction that I'm referring to. It was a pack closure. It's like the absolute worst you could have, naturally, because that's just my dumb luck. There's no indication whatsoever of the container even opening. So I went through my kind of emergency procedures and cut that away, and ultimately pulled my reserve, landed in a cornfield about a mile away from the drop zone. That was the first jump of the day. I went back up a second time because you got to get back on that horse. You know, you got to get back in that saddle and not let fear fester. Second jump was good. Came back down, went up a third time, and then I had another parachute cutaway. And then after that, I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm not going to push my luck anymore. I'm good for today. But it kept on jumping the rest of that week.
What type of what kind of whiskey did you drink that night?
A lot of it.
A lot. Wait, so when you're, so how fat, okay, but this goes back to, again, adversity and keeping your wits about you, because I want to, again, correlate it back to, let's think of the business owner who doesn't get the deal or who blows the presentation, right? Thinks the world is ending. So you're in this midst of going, how fast are you tumbling down to the ground? Any idea how fast you're going when we're plummeting?
I think, I want to say terminal velocity is 172 miles an hour. I'm not positive, but it's pretty freaking fast.
Okay. So you're going fast. And now how do you have the resolve? You obviously got the backup. But what is going through your mind there, and both the first and the third time, and you're like, shit, three times, this is ridiculous. But, you know, two out of three times is not a good batting average, right? But what did you do to keep your wits about you to focus on the mission at hand, which is, in this case, now becomes survival?
Uh-huh. You know what it comes back to? It comes back to training. So before every jump, every jumper goes through the emergency cutaway procedures in his own mind and walks through it. You know, just walks through it with his hands. What would happen if he had to cut away and pull his reserve? I never had to actually do that. I never actually physically did it in practice because you can't. It's not something you can really do in practice, but you can mimic the motions, right? And so, what became so just second nature for me was the visualization exercises that I would go through, not just prior to every jump, but prior to target. I would go through a lot of, so this comes down to the performance aspect that we talked about earlier, the mental component. There's actually seven mental components, one of which is visualization. And so I would visualize going through, I would actually need to do if this situation ever had to occur. And so the key with visualizing is to visualize right. You know, you don't want to visualize what could happen or what might go wrong. You want to visualize a flawless execution so that when you're in that sort of instance where things are not ideal, your brain already knows what right looks like, and so it finds it immediately. So having that sort of process, that mental, I call it a mental game plan, and going through it each and every time, that's what, it just became second nature to me.
Incredible. And I assume then you use that same adage, picking yourself up and focusing on, instead of the mission, when there was two separate times then that you were actually shot during your eight deployments.
Yeah, I was shot on my fourth and sixth deployments. And you know, just on the topic of having a mental game plan, what saved me the first time I got shot, I saw, this was in Iraq, and I saw a guy. I was making a room entry, and I saw a guy out of the corner of my eye, out of my periphery, about 8 feet away, standing with something on his hip, and I knew it wasn't a handshake. And I knew, because of the distance I was in, I knew that I couldn't swing my weapon around, aim, and fire faster than he could on me. And it was because I was in something called the reactionary gap. It's a distance where action will beat reaction every single time. And I just knew this instinctively. And so I backed out. And as I backed out, he caught me three times in the rail of my gun and one time in the lower left chest plate. But had I not seen him, you know, who knows? I mean, he would have had a much larger target to hit, right? But when you, if you, you know, if you're familiar with stress and its impact upon the body, when you're under intense amount of stress, it creates something called visual constriction. You know, it's tunnel vision, right? And so you don't see that periphery. You don't see anything out of the corner of your eye. What allowed me to do that was the mental game plan that I had prior to target. And it was just a breathing exercise that allowed me to sort of, you know, lower my heart rate. Same thing I do before going into, like, you know, high level client meetings. Same thing anybody can do before a cold call. It's just something called box breathing. And I'll share that with you in a second. But what that did was lower my heart rate so that I wasn't stressed. I could see everything. And that's what kind of allowed me to walk away from that unscathed. But box breathing, just for anybody, for the listeners out there who aren't familiar with it, box breathing, say for example, just choose a time limit. I chose 4 seconds. Inhale for 4 seconds, hold your breath at the top of the lungs for 4 seconds, exhale for 4 seconds, and then hold at the bottom of the exhalation for 4 seconds. And then repeat that until you're good. I did that before every target, at least most targets, when I knew that it was going to be hairy, and works every time.
So it's almost in a sense like a mini meditation.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
Awesome stuff. Yeah, I had not heard of box breathing. I had not heard that, but I'm going to do it right now. Okay, that's probably not good radio. Not good radio there. So one thing, and this kind of leads into the secret sauce of success in everything, but you know, and I know you mentioned in your podcast is and maybe also in some of your writing, but the secret sauce of what makes the SEALs successful, and then how you can connect that and correlate it to business. And you know, it's everything. And I don't know if you have, I'm sure you have them memorized there, but you know, one of the core focuses there is the easiest one, listeners, is what? Is showing up on time. And you would think that, oh, that's second nature. But how many times do you have somebody who doesn't show up on time? And that's, it's just disrespectful, right? And that's a motto that I think you live by anywhere, military or not, correct?
It is. You know, time is a precious commodity. And so when you show up on time, what you're really showing is respect for the other people there as well. When you don't show up on time, it's disrespectful. So yeah, absolutely show up on time. But some of the companies, you know, like they have this quote unquote culture where it's okay to show up 15 minutes late. And that's complete BS. What they don't have, what the secret sauce that you're referring to is teams. And one of the aspects that goes into having an effective team are team norms. You know, norms, behavioral rules, expectations for how the team is supposed to behave and how it shouldn't. And part of that is being punctual, right? There can always be a consequence for those who show up late, but having those rules is absolutely, you got to have those rules.
Yeah, I've just joined an organization called Entrepreneurs Organization, which is a global chapter or a global organization, the Arizona chapter here, which has about 168 members, all business owners and entrepreneurs that have built successful companies. And, you know, what we do is we learn from each other, we hold each other accountable. And in a monthly forum meeting, we call it, if anybody's late, and every forum has a little bit different accountability to it, but you know, it costs money, you know, because time is a precious commodity. No matter if you're at the top of the chain or working your way up, it's that respect factor. Even if you're going out to dinner with somebody, you know, there's nothing worse just between you and me, Jeff, that, you know, when my wife is a little late to, you know, when we're running, it's just disrespectful, you know, and then when that becomes an argument and so forth. So it's like, sometimes I got to tell her, you know, we're meeting them 30 minutes earlier than we actually are. But that's a whole nother podcast that we're not going to get into today. So what are some of the other secret sauce for that team building that we can incorporate into the business aspect of success?
Yeah, something else is actually having a team charter, we had, and it was called an operational order, but in business, they typically refer to them as team charters or almost like a roadmap. And what that is, it clearly establishes what the team's about, its identity, what it does, why it's important, who's on that team, and the behavioral norms that guide it. So it's almost like, think of it as like a constitution. No team that I've ever worked with actually has one of these. But once they have it, it's really just that. It's a roadmap for success. And I'd imagine that in your line of work, in the line of work that probably most of your listeners are out there, they need some sort of process, a framework for how they're going to show up every single day with cold calling, with reaching out to clients, acquiring new clients. There's got to be that process, right? And so that's what that team charter does.
And so when you're starting to work with a team or the leader of that team, what is your process to kind of indoctrinate in and learn about where they are, their systems, and how you can help improve it? What does that look like when you start a relationship with a team?
Yeah, it's first I'll partner with the leader just to identify, you know, what the current situation is and what they want the situation to be, you know, what their goals are, what success looks like. And then I'll take that and then I'll share it with the other team members and see, you know, I'll ask them, what's your definition of success here? And most of the time, it's always different than what the leader has established. So, you know, that question becomes why? Where's the disconnect here? So I'll start with getting a clear definition of what winning looks like, and cascade it down throughout the team. And then I'll really just sit in on their team meetings, and I'll collect data on how they meet, how they communicate, how they make decisions. I think the most challenging part is narrowing down the goals, because every team wants everything, right? And just one thing at a time. It's got to be one bite at a time. So looking at how team members communicate with each other, their nonverbals, their verbals, you know, the tones they use, you know, I mean, I'll get so specific as to look at their blink rate when they talk about heated discussions, because it tells me that they're nervous. There's a lot of different aspects, but it all comes down to meeting, communicating, and deciding as a team.
So you're mainly, a lot of these are on sites then. You're not doing virtual work when you're getting in and creating that relationship with the leader and the team. You're actually on site, touching, feeling, seeing the culture, seeing what's going on, and getting that feel for the energy.
The coaching part can be. So I'll start off with that sort of discovery and then move into it to a team coaching phase. And the team coaching can be online. It's not as effective as being in person because you don't get that feel. You know, you can't ascertain the chemistry, but it can be done. But as far as the assessment goes, that needs to be in person. And that's only a few sessions. You know, it's only a few times. But you take that and then you convert it into data, present it back to the team, and then that kind of creates contrast between where they think they are and where they actually are, and then that leads into the team coaching.
Let me ask you this: do you use a coach to help better you?
I do. I'm a business coach as well, because who would I be if I'm preaching having a coach when I don't have one myself? You know, so
good answer, my man. Good answer.
You know, I've had one for probably the past 5 or 6 months.
Do you think it's been helpful, you know, knowing that this is the world you're in, that you're, or I assume it is, right, that you've been using it 5, 6 months?
It's been awesome. He's helped me identify, kind of narrow down my focus, because my focus is with every entrepreneur, it's everywhere. So he's helped me with that, helped me identify kind of like my target audience at a higher level. He's just helped me think about things in a different way that, you know, not everybody can think of every. I would actually say that nobody can think of everything by themselves, you know, and even as a solopreneur, you need somebody else out there to hold you accountable, to challenge your perspective and say, at least offer not necessarily a better way to do something, but another way.
And is that where you find yourself most effective, being the solopreneur, is not having, at least at this point, not having the team out there that helping to grow your company? Is that where you feel more comfortable?
Right now, that's more of a matter of finance. It's more of a matter of just not having the financial means to really hire anybody just yet. But I would like to, but I still want to keep it small. You know, I don't want to run a company. I don't want to run a huge team. I like small. So maybe a couple people in the future, but just not right now.
And you really, you enjoy getting out there and doing the speaking engagements?
I do. I never used to, but I learned to like it because I actually just learned how to shift my thinking. I used to look at speaking as me versus them, you know, and then there's always the fear of social judgment. You know, what are they going to think about me? But I quickly learned how to turn that into almost like a superpower, because when you can see it as a conversation, as opposed to like a me versus them discussion, more of a conversation where you are included with the audience as opposed to different sides. And then when you can see it as a challenge, I just saw it as a personal challenge to get better at it. That's what was really kind of like the light switch for me in shifting from, you know, kind of being anxious about it to looking forward to the next opportunity.
Oh, that's great advice. And you know, one thing that you've done a great job of over these last few years as you're building your brand and your company is really understanding social media and the power of credibility. So like walk us through, if somebody, I know you've been a contributor to Forbes now for a while, how does, if a business owner has good things to offer, how did you get that ability to get into Forbes and be a contributor and writing content several times a month?
You know, I did. I reached out to, I just reached out to him via LinkedIn. That's what I did. I cold emailed him. I was looking for the editor of this, of the particular channel that I contribute to. And the editor didn't show up, but somebody connected to him did. So I pitched him and said, this is who I am. This is what I'd like to do. This is why I think readers would find it valuable. And he said, cool. I can't make that decision, but I know somebody who can. So he connected me with the editor. And then here I am 3 years later, still writing for him every week.
That's awesome. And in the show notes, there'll be the link to your basically your main page at Forbes to see all the articles that you wrote. I think you can also set it up where you follow. So any new articles that come out, you'll get it emailed to you. And also in the show notes is going to be a way to download the first chapter of Navigating Chaos. So that will be in there. And I highly recommend that book for business owner, team leader, even just getting started in the business, anything, you know, that it's just, you break it down stuff that as we talk through, we can't get to, you know, a tenth of what's in the book itself. What about this podcast? So the Shut Up and Show Up podcast that you, I think it's pretty brand new, right? You're only a couple episodes in.
Yeah. I got the trailer. I got episode 2 out. So, it's going to officially launch May 1st, but I got a couple out there already.
Perfect. And this will actually probably go live right around that time frame. So show notes will be there on how to register and subscribe to the Show Up and or the Shut Up and Show Up. So what is what's the mission of that? What's your theme? What's your thinking in what this podcast is going to be all about?
Yeah, thank you for that. So it's really about forging elite teams, translating not just how we operate in the SEALs, but how elite business teams do the same, and how those, ideally the listeners who want to forge elite teams themselves, can take away those lessons and apply for themselves. That's the byline, forging elite teams. The title is Shut Up and Show Up, because oftentimes when I give speeches, you know, like one of the questions from the audience members is, Jeff, we don't, you know, we're not a SEAL team. We don't have high performers. We don't have that sort of luxury. You know, what do we do? What do we do with people who just aren't motivated? I'm like, you know what? Bullshit. That's where it comes back to shut up and show up. You just got to do the work. You got to do the work, create those conditions for them. And if they're not living up to those conditions, if they're not performing, get them off the team, you know. But the goal isn't to necessarily convert low performers into high performers. The goal is really to convert those who are performing decently into high performers, because the low performers, they're pretty much gone. You know, they're on their own kind of agenda. Need to be managed in a different way. The goal is to translate average performers into high performers. So that's what this is really about. And part of that, you know, the shut up and show up part, it's just eliminating excuses and just getting the work done.
Well, it's so refreshing in this environment we're in. Everything's politically correct. It's like, boom, let's hit it head on. Let's go old school. And I love the name. And hopefully not too many people are offended. And if they are, they can shut up and don't have to show up, right?
Well, that's why I do that. I do that. I create that polarization intentionally, because those who are offended, good. Find another podcast. You're not part of my tribe.
Love it. I love it. The other thing that will be in the notes, and I think you talk about these 11 key principles about teams. It's a little white paper that you've put together that can really break down on a high level what makes a successful team, and then what type of team that you are. So is this the type of info that you gather when you're trying to learn about that company that you end up coaching for?
Yeah, that's more like all that sort of data comes in for sure, but that's something I'll share with them beforehand just to think about. Because when people think of teams, what they really are is a group. They're just a group that calls themselves the teams. And so what that white paper does is kind of show them the difference, just at a high level. And then when we talk, we'll get into specifics.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, I know we could spend a lot more time going through things, but listeners, on a high level, you know, Jeff was able to take us through what makes a team successful. bringing in his experiences and his passion for everything he does, whether it be training and facilitating and protecting within the Navy SEALs or out in the private sector, and focusing on getting, for yourself, Jeff, getting better every day, and then instilling that same passion with helping you get better every day as a business owner, as a leader, as a person. And it doesn't happen overnight. What we learned today, Jeff, it takes work. It takes perseverance. It does take passion, and it takes listening to your team. So this has been awesome stuff. Anything that you'd like to add before we send you on your way to, which I'm sure is a busy day?
No, it's been great talking with you. Great catching up. Thanks for everything. It's been really good. Thank you.
Awesome stuff. Jeff, thank you again. And tune in later this month for another episode of Your Wealth and Beyond. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you for joining me for today's episode of Your Wealth and Beyond. To get access to all the resources mentioned during today's podcast, please visit Baintree.com/podcast. And be sure to tune in later this month for another episode of Your Wealth and Beyond.
Investment advice is offered through Baintree Wealth Advisors, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Insurance and annuity products are offered separately through Baintree Planning Group, LLC. Baintree is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. You should talk to a qualified professional before making any decisions about your personal situation.